I'm speaking today with Rick Molina, who is candidate for state representative in District 144. Rick, first question I'd like to ask is, why are you running for this office?
I'm running for District 144 because I firmly believe that the people in District 144 don't have someone in office that represents their interest. And District 144 is Pasadena, about two-thirds of Pasadena, about one-third of Houston. The Houston parts are Sagemont, and I meet them all. But I believe that the people in that district don't have, you know, adequate representation in Austin. And I think that, you know, with the team that I've assembled, you know, we're going to educate the voters of why that needs to change.
Well, let's start. I mean, when you say they don't have adequate representation, what do you mean by that?
I think that the person that's there now does not have the district's interest in mind when it comes to votes and how issues are framed. The district is probably one of the few industrial districts left in this area. You know, Pasadena is, for the most part, an industrial community. There are some parts of Pasadena closer to Clear Lake that are not as industrial as the northern end of Pasadena. But there's a lot of hardworking folks. You know, the pocketbook issues, and I think the person that's there now does not have you know, the interest in mind when he represents you know, those people in Austin.
Okay. Well, as you say, Pasadena is an industrial area, and as you know, there's been a lot of back and forth, if you will, between the governor and the TCEQ, the Texas Commission on Environmental Quality, and the Environmental Protection Agency over how plants are permitted and over clean air standards.
Right.
You know, the state says that they're doing a perfectly adequate job, that their flex permits are fine to protect clean air standards. The EPA disagrees with them on both points. What's your take on this?
I mean, I think, you know, the federal, the EPA, they have the authority to enforce the law, obviously. You know, and I'm glad that they're doing so, and they should. I think that, you know, if Texas and Rick Perry, just because it hasn't been enforced in the past, or, you know, they've gotten some free passes in the past, you know, it doesn't mean that, you know, they should do so now. And actually, I think my opponent, this is one issue where there's a clear difference. You know, I think he wrote an op-ed piece in the local Pasadena paper in support of Rick Perry. But, you know, I do think that the EPA should enforce, you know, the regulations. And in Texas, it is not, you know, they're not exempt. You know, if Texas is not complying, then we need to get in compliance. It's that simple. You know, at the end of the day, you know, if they're, you know, if we're getting excused from permits that we shouldn't be excused from, I mean, the people in Pasadena, more than probably any other district, are affected by that. You know, we're the ones that have to live there. We're the ones that have to live with it. So, you know, I completely support, you know, the enforcement of the EPA regulations, especially for the people of Pasadena.
You know, usually it's framed by the people who are opposing this as a jobs issue, that if EPA comes in, enforces regulations, if the flexible permits aren't allowed, that it will cause job loss. How do you respond to that?
There are plants dotted all along 225. There are a lot of jobs in the area that are in the plants. I don't think, you know, complying with the regulations is going to cause the job loss that they're saying. You know, they use that argument routinely, but I don't see the empirical evidence that shows complying with clean air regulations causes the job loss. You know, there are other things, there are other examples that I can point to that have a direct effect on jobs. You know, outsourcing. You know, I don't think plants and industries in the area should outsource jobs. especially when, you know, the Texas unemployment rate is probably hovering just below 9%. The last stat I read in Pasadena was Southeast Harris County. I think the unemployment rate was about, you know, 8.6, 8.5. So there are people there willing to work. There's no need to outsource those jobs when there are people there to work. I don't buy the argument that complying with EPA regulations is going to cause job loss. I just don't get it. I don't buy that.
Okay. excuse me. The main issue facing the state right now, of course, is budget shortfall.
Sure.
$18 billion is the number that's usually cited, although there's some argument over whether that's too high or too low. But
sure.
The bottom line is, how should the legislature approach dealing with the budget shortfall?
This is not a short-term issue. You know, we're going to have this issue this upcoming session, and it's going to be an issue probably in the next few sessions until it's resolved fully. I know that there's the rainy day fund that people have talked about, and that may be a short-term solution. You know, I'm willing to explore that, but that's not going to solve the budgetary issues for the next several issues. I mean, I think as a state, you know, we need to take a comprehensive look at revenue, you know, how we spend it, especially with the schools, you know, so that 4 years from now, 6 years from now, you know, we're not dealing with the issue with shortfalls every 2 years. You know, we could use the rainy day fund, or parts of it anyway, you know, in this kind of upcoming session. But I think if you look at the projections, you know, we're going to have budgetary issues, at least for the foreseeable future, you know, the next 4 to 6 years, until something is done with school finance.
Well, of course, when you talk about that, in 2006, the legislature, in response to a Supreme Court ruling that basically invalidated the existing property tax structure, the legislature cut property taxes by a third and created business margins tax and increased tax on cigarettes as a way to compensate for that. But from the beginning, the compensatory revenues, the business margins tax and so on, have fallen far short of the amount that was lost to the property tax cut. So when you talk about it going forward, that seems to me to be part of that. You know, what do you think the legislature should do about that?
The business margins tax probably does need to be revisited. I don't think it's worked out the way it was projected. You know, the revenues have fallen short, primarily because there's a lot of exemptions to it, and I don't think they took into account whatever their mathematics was in doing the projections. It just didn't work out. You know, it probably does need to be revisited. Everything has to be on the table in terms of, you know, how it's implemented, how the exemptions are granted, to see, you know, if the projections for the business margin tax can be reworked. Because essentially, if that's not done, you know, we're going to have these budgetary issues at least for the foreseeable future. I would be in favor of revisiting that and see if that can be retooled to make it better. You know, if not, you know, other issues, other things have to come up, or else we're going to have these issues, these budgetary issues every few years. And we can't use a rainy day fund every session. You know, logically, if you do that, ultimately that would be zero.
One potential solution for increasing revenue in the state is expanded gambling. There's proposals that have been around for a while, and they're going to try again this coming session for things like allowing for casinos, or allowing for slot machines, video lottery terminals at horse race tracks. And you may get, you know, one or both that get introduced into the legislature. Where do you stand on the issue?
You know, Texas has the lottery now. You know, in terms of people in this state, there's a lot of people that gamble in the state as it is. You know, the buses come in from Louisiana and take them back for the day or for the weekend. So I think the interest is there for gambling. I'm mindful of the issues regarding the secondary issues. People say, it may promote some vices, but those vices, they may exist with drugs, drinking, smoking, whatever it may be. I think gambling does need to be explored to some extent. I know that there's some issues regarding gambling just in horse tracks, as opposed to just full-blown Las Vegas-style casinos. I haven't seen the revenue projections on those, what each of those may entail, what the revenue projections would be, what the cost would be to society. But I am willing to explore those to see if that would be an avenue of maybe making up some of the shortfall, again, not just for the short term, but to have it, be as a revenue source to the state so that we don't have these shortfalls every 2 years.
So would you say you're leaning towards supporting or not supporting an eventual bill?
I haven't seen any of the bills or what the revenue projections would be, but short of that, I would be leaning towards favoring some type of gambling.
Okay. Another hot issue these days, of course, is immigration.
Sure.
Border security. Some legislators have talked about introducing a bill. Actually, there was one last session that would create an Arizona-style law for having local law enforcement deal with immigration. Where do you stand on this?
I have not seen an issue probably more demagogued than immigration is being demagogued right now. First of all, major parts of the Arizona law have already been invalidated. So
it's not necessarily going to stop anyone.
I understand. And that won't stop anyone, but why anyone would propose a law that's already been invalidated, they're free to do so. And I think it's going to make its way to the courts and ultimately be decided by the Supreme Court, as it should be. This is probably one of the areas where I agree with Rick Perry, and this type of law is not right for Texas. But there are several complex issues related to immigration that do need to be addressed by the federal government. Border security, we do need to make the border safe. Business owners, they need the labor and the capital to get their jobs completed and their work done. They need clear rules to know how they can comply. There's the moral issue of splitting up families. It's very complex and comprehensive. We could probably talk about that for an hour in itself.
Well, it's just limited to those two. What, if anything, should the state be doing? We all agree about the federal part. Or at least we agree that there is a federal role,
right?
Primarily. What, if anything, should the state be doing?
The state can monitor the border. They can help. The local authorities or the federal authorities to the extent that they can. About 40% of the budget, from my understanding, is spent on education. I'm not sure with the shortfall that we have the resources to help the federal government do their job. Whatever resources, financial resources that we have, have to go into education, which is a primary function of the state. Whatever resources, financial resources that we have left over, we could work with and cooperate with the federal government and helping them do their job. But I agree that something has to be done with immigration in terms of making the border safe. What the state's role in that would be assisting the federal government.
Okay. Let's talk just a bit about schools. As you say, public education is a large part of the state's budget. Given that the directive has been handed down for agencies in particular to cut 5% and 10% of their budgets over the next 2 years, and given that so much money in the budget goes to public education. You know, what approach do you want to see taken here?
You know, we're already near the bottom one-third of spending per pupil in the nation. You know, we cut it any more, we may be at the bottom. You know, I don't see how much lower we can go in spending. I mean, there's so many more things to do with education. I mean, and I think this is another clear difference on where I think the voters of Pasadena and Southeast Houston, you know, have a clear difference. I mean, you have to have a fundamental belief that, you know, public education is good for society. And if you don't even have that belief that it's good for society and good for the public, then everything else, you know, that dictates everything else that you do. You know, I firmly believe that, you know, public education is probably one of the best drivers of jobs. It's the foundation for everything. You know, it's a foundation for good jobs. It's a foundation for reducing crime, for better neighborhoods. You name it. I mean, my belief is you have to start with education. So we have to pour everything that we have into it to make sure that it works. Don't set up a system that's to fail. You know, give the teachers the technology and the financial resources that they need. And you know, go in and talk to the kids. You know, work on reducing, you know, the dropout rate. You know, help the middle class, you know, having their kids attend college. You know, in terms of financial resources, you know, I don't want to cut the budget, you know, on the backs of education. You know, that's not the way to do it. You know, I think it hurts Texas in the long run. You know, it hurts the economy, it hurts the neighborhoods, and that's just not the way to balance the budget.
Since you mentioned college, in the last time we had a big budget crunch in 2003, the legislature deregulated college tuition for the public universities, which allowed them to set their own tuition rates in return for getting less money up front from the state. College tuitions have gone up considerably since then. Do you believe that needs to be revisited?
Absolutely. I mean, it's a terrible squeeze on the middle class. You know, I would like to see some of the tuition rates obviously roll back to the extent they can. I mean, it's been an incredible burden for middle class families to have their kids attend college. You know, people are forced to get private loans, graduate with debt. You know, that coupled with the recession, you know, to graduate with thousands of dollars of debt and not being able to find a job, you know, that's not a good way to start a career. So, you know, we have to change that. And it's not just universities, it's also the, you know, the community colleges have to, you know, are affected as well. So, yeah, I mean, absolutely, that needs to be revisited. You know, nothing else, the double-digit hikes have to stop. In some form or fashion, you know, something has to be done to help the middle class, you know, be able to afford college.
You are a personal injury attorney, and that's a profession that's often demagogued by Republicans. Give me a 30-second defense of the profession of personal injury attorney.
Well, let me start by saying, I did start out as a prosecutor. I've been in private practice. I started out as a prosecutor for 4 years. I prosecuted in Harris County from 92 to 96, and I've been in private practice since 96. And I have done both sides of the docket in private practice. So it's not as though I do personal injury exclusively in my career. But there is a fundamental difference in how issues are viewed. You know, you have the insurance companies dictating rules on one side, and you have you know, individuals and their representatives on the other side. And it's not just with respect to personal injury. I mean, I think these issues cut across several segments of how we live. You know, it dictates insurance rates. You know, how insurance rates are handled. You know, we have some of the highest insurance rates in the nation. You know, I think, especially in Southeast Harris County, you know, where I'm from, you know, we have, especially, you know, you have to get flood insurance. You know, God forbid you have to get flood insurance. You know, that's going to tack on another $2,000 to your insurance policy. But I think from the personal injury, I mean, going back to, you know, from a personal injury perspective, you know, I enjoy representing individuals and the issues that they face. A lot of times, you know, when I talk to someone and they've been wronged by an insurance company, or they feel that they've been wronged, I mean, I enjoy talking with them, enjoying their issues, and representing them, you know, to the extent I can, and their problems. I don't think that's something that's suited for everybody, but you know, you have to. It has taught me one thing, and it has taught me, you know, how to fight for someone, and how to fight for the issues that you believe in. And I would use that same tenacity that I've used in representing my clients and representing the people of this district in Austin.
And as you know, of course, a few years ago, Texas passed a constitutional amendment that limited damages in medical malpractice cases at $250,000. What has been the effect of that on people who come to you to, you know, for assistance?
Well, I think it's had a few effects, but let me talk about first the effects it's had on injured people. I think that, you know, a lot of people that have been, and it's applying to medical malpractice cases, I think what you're referring to. I think it's affected some people where I personally know of cases where, you know, people have lost a child or they've lost one of their kids, and you know, the lawyers are just not representing those people as much anymore because you know, there's limited recovery, and they're better off representing themselves, which they're not not comfortable doing. So, from that perspective, on the serious injury cases, or people are seriously injured, or someone dies, you know, it has had a tremendous effect on those cases. You know, in terms of the insurance rates, you know, I think one of the theories was when that law passed, it was going to cut back on the insurance rates for the doctors. I don't think that's quite panned out like they thought it would. And the insurance rates, and I agree that healthcare costs are high and they are skyrocketing, and something needs to be done to control those costs. But limiting the amount of recovery for someone who died has turned out not to be the way to do it. So, you know, I would consider, you know, exploring that and other issues, but, you know, that probably does need to be reworked. So at least on the death cases or someone that's seriously injured, you know, they have the right recourse that they need.
One thing you hear about regarding this election is that there's an enthusiasm gap, that Republicans are more excited about voting than Democrats are. Do you see that when you're out campaigning? And if so, how do you deal with it?
I don't think it's any more of a gap than it has been in any other midterm election. Usually the national party out of power is generally more enthusiastic on the midterm elections. But, you know, we've been walking, you know, door to door now for a while. I think that the enthusiasm that I see from talking to the people in Pasadena and Houston is the enthusiasm is to go vote. I've had so many people tell me, you know, this is my first time voting, this is going to be my second time voting, and I think this is sort of the overflow from the last presidential election. There were so many new voters the last election, you know, and they're ready to come back out and vote. And I think the sentiment is that it's anti-incumbent, not necessarily anti-democratic or anti-Republican. The sense that I'm getting from talking to the people is that there is an anti-incumbent sentiment, sort of, you know, at the grassroots level. That I think if I were an incumbent, I would be worried. But you know, I don't necessarily see it as a enthusiasm gap for Democrats in general. And I think we actually have more enthusiasm here in Harris County with Bill White on the ticket. I have seen that. There's so many people here locally that are ready to get out and vote in support Bill White for governor than I've seen in the past.
Okay. And when people go to vote in this election and they come to your race, why should they vote for you and not your opponent?
There's a few issues that I think there's a clear difference and where I stand as opposed to my opponent. You know, one of them being education. I firmly believe that, you know, we need the best public education system on the planet, and whatever resources that we have to make that better, I'm all for it. I have a vested interest in making sure that our public education system is the best it can be, especially in Pasadena and Deer Park. The two school districts in this district are Pasadena and Deer Park. Even the schools in the city of Houston are in Pasadena School District. My family, my son, my nephews, my nieces, they all go to the local public schools. I have a vested interest in making sure that the local public schools succeed. And I think that's probably one of the main issues where I differ with my opponent. And we're doing everything we can. We're door knocking, phone banking. We're doing all that now. With the assistance of volunteers, and I got to say, Joel Redman's been a huge help. He ran last time, and he's been an incredible resource. I've tapped his knowledge on things that he did and didn't do last race, and I'm hoping to learn from his experiences. And we're going to do it. I'm firmly convinced. It's going to be good for the people of Pasadena, good for the people of Harris County, and good for the people of the state of Texas.
All right. Rick Williams, thank you very much for talking to me.
Thank you.